By way of introduction to this Mishnah about which shofar one is allowed to use on Rosh Hashanah and which shofar is considered not acceptable for Rosh Hashanah, I just want to give a little bit of introduction, and that is, if you have the handout, Rav Soloveitchik wrote an absolutely beautiful article in Tradition, and it's a very long article that, was reprinted in Tradition, but it's something that he wrote about tying a lot of things together, but in the middle of that article he talks about what exactly tefillah is, what exactly prayer is, and I think it's important for us to have a little bit of a perspective before we read through our Mishnah and learn it together. So let's read just the underlined parts of this paragraph, where he writes as follows. Judaism, in contradistinction to mystical quietism, I didn't know that was a word, which recommended toleration of pain, right? In general society, they expect you to tolerate pain. Judaism wants man to cry out aloud against any kind of pain, to react indignantly to all kinds of injustice and unfairness. For Judaism held that the individual who displays indifference to pain and suffering, who meekly reconciles himself to the ugly, disproportionate, and unjust in life, is not capable of appreciating beauty and goodness. Right? If you never feel that there's anything that needs to be perfected, then you really won't think that there's anything that actually is better than what you have. Whoever permits his legitimate needs to go unsatisfied will never be sympathetic to the crying needs of others. If you think everything's fine the way you're living life, so you think the way everything's fine the way everyone else is living life, and you don't understand, you don't empathize, you don't sympathize with people who might be suffering a tremendous loss in their own personal lives. Skip down to the next underline. For Judaism, need awareness constitutes part of the definition of human experience. Again, need awareness, the fact that we recognize that we are lacking, that we have needs, that's a major part of the human existence. And he says, I suffer, therefore I am. Right? That's part of being a human being, is to understand that we have difficulties, we have things that we're not successful in overcoming, and we still go on as living the human existence. Go to the next part. Therefore, prayer in Judaism. So with that background, he says, what exactly is our approach? What is our perspective toward tefillah? So he writes the following. Therefore, prayer in Judaism, unlike the prayer of classical mysticism, is bound up with the human needs, wants, drives, and urges, which make man suffer. So you might ask, why is it that I'm going ahead and asking the Ribbono Shel Olam for all my petty little things, and I'm allowed in Shemona Esrei to add in all kinds of bakashas, all kinds of tefillos? So I want to win my basketball game tonight, I'm allowed to add that into my Shemona Esrei if it's really meaningful to me. Why? Why? God has time for this? He has nothing better to do? Says Rav Soloveitchik, because our understanding of tefillah is to present the human needs, the wants, the drives, and urges, which make man suffer. Prayer is the doctrine of human needs. Prayer tells the individual as well as the community what his or its genuine needs are, what he or what he should or should not petition God about. So if you take tefillah seriously, you're going to spend a little bit of time during your davening or before or after to think about, what am I going to highlight in my tefillah? What's a real necessity in my life? What is important to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam about? What should I present him with, and what maybe is not so important and I should just overcome and just forget about? So tefillah is an opportunity for us to really hone in on the deficiencies that we might be going through, that we might have, but also to find those things which are really significant to us. He goes on, who prays, right? Who is chayv in tefillah? We all know there's machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, to chayv midaraisa. And one of the Rishonim feels that you have a chayv tefillah every single day. And the other opinion feels, no, you have a chayv tefillah only b'eis sarah, only when you're in a time of great distress, of great need. And Rav Soloveitchik said, in his opinion, there's no machlokas at all. Because a person should feel every day of their lives that they are in a circumstance of great distress, of great need, even if you think life is wonderful, even if you think everything's great, and you walk around saying, Baruch Hashem for all the gifts that I have, but bottom line, you have to recognize that life is in the balance, and it's not always going to be the way it is, and unless you recognize that you're always in a time of distress, that you're always in a time of need, you're always at the mercy of the Ribbono Shel Olam, you're missing what tefillah really is supposed to be about. So he writes over here, who prays? Who is obligated to pray? And I think here he's making a reference to that shiur that he gave about how to reconcile the Rambam and the Ramban, that really tefillah every day is supposed to be with the attitude that I'm in an eis tzara. I need the Ribbono Shel Olam to help me, because without him, I'm really in a seriously horrible situation. I'm not going to be able to continue. Only the sufferer prays. If man does not find himself in narrow straits, if he is not troubled by anything, if he knows not what tzara is, then he need not pray. The Ribbono Shalom doesn't need your tefillah. If you don't feel there's anything lacking in your life, if you don't feel that you need him for anything, then why should you have anything to do? My father has said over on many occasions that there was a boy in NCSY whose father was very upset that the child had become religious, or I don't know exactly the details of the story, something of that nature. And the father was a multi-millionaire, and basically he wrote the son a check, and he said, you know what, you're not interested in the lifestyle we have, here's a check, get away from me, I don't want to see you for the rest of my life. And he gave him an exorbitant amount of money to take care of himself. After all, he was a very wealthy man, but he told his son, get out of my life. If this is the attitude you have, that you don't think what we do is good enough, and you think your way of life is better, you can go live your own life, I don't want to hear from you. And my father says over how the boy really had to go for serious psychological treatment afterward, because after a while, that's not what a relationship is. What a relationship is that a person feels that I am needy, and therefore I have to rely upon others, and people need my help and I need their help. That's part of the human condition. If a person goes on in life feeling that I never need anything, again, what was the punishment of the Nachash? My father always says this over. Why does it make sense that the Nachash was punished, that now Al-Afar Tichya, you're going to be able to live on dust? What do you mean? Afar is going to be everywhere in the world. Not the greatest bracha. Imagine if you were given a bracha, you never have to go for a parnasa again. Why? Because your food is going to be right outside your door every single day. Everything's going to be provided for you. I promise you, you're never going to have to worry about anything again. So isn't that a bracha? Why is that a klala? The Nachash comes out on top. Nachash never has to work another day in his life. Doesn't matter where he might go. He can go on a trip to the other side of the world. He doesn't have to pack anything up. All he needs is the dirt on the ground. There's always going to be dirt. The answer is no, that's the greatest punishment. When you give a person a blank check and say, get out of my face, I don't want to see you again for the rest of your life, I don't want to have anything to do with you, you take care of yourself, you fend for yourself, what kind of relationship is that? That's the awful punishment that the Nachash suffers, and we find that this is sometimes human nature also. If somebody will give you a blank check, but they'll say, get away from me, I don't want to have anything to do with you in my life, that's really going to make a very negative impression on what your relationship is. And that's what Rav Soloveitchik says as well. Tefillah is a time for a person to recognize that you are in narrow straits, that you are in an eis tzara. To a happy man, to a contented man, the secret of prayer was not revealed. Tefillah is not for you. He wants to hear, the Ribbono Shel'olam wants to hear the outcry of man confronted with a ruthless reality. He expects prayer to rise from a suffering world, cognizant of its genuine needs. In short, through prayer, man finds himself. Through prayer, I find myself. It's a humbling experience. Why? Because I have to really think carefully. Where do I have to rely on the Ribbono Shel Olam in my life? And where is it not important to ask him for help in certain issues? What are the issues in my life that really are lacking, that really need help, that really need guidance? And what are the issues that we could just overlook and say, forget about it, this is really not critical, it's not important? Prayer enlightens man about his needs. It tells man the story of his hidden hopes and expectations. It teaches him how to behold the vision and how to strive in order to realize this vision. When to be satisfied with what one possesses, when to reach out for more. In a word, man finds his need awareness himself in prayer. Of course, the very instant he finds himself, he becomes a redeemed being. Okay, so then Rav Soloveitchik flips it and he says, well, once you find yourself, then it's a great experience. But basically, the experience of tefillah, and I remember I saw there's a beautiful sefer that was written in recent years called Al HaTefillah. If you've ever seen the svarim of Rav Soloveitchik, Al HaTshuva and a bunch of little svarim, so they put out another one in recent years. It's a off-white volume, very nice group of Shtiklach Torah that Rav Soloveitchik said over about tefillah. And in there they have, I think, in his name from the Mabit, that he was quoting the Mabit in the Beis Elokim, that why is it that we stand with our feet together during Shmona Esrei? What is that all about? So some say the reason why is because the Pasuk tells us, V'raglehem regel yishara, that Malachim stand with their feet together and they have a straight leg, and therefore we try to be like the Malachim when we daven Shmona Esrei, so we stand with our feet together as if we have one leg. But the Mabit, as quoted by Rav Soloveitchik, suggests a very different approach, that perhaps the reason why we sit, why we stand with our feet together is because we try to act like people who are disabled. We try to act like people who only have one leg. And we show the Ribbono Shel Olam that we are absolutely crippled, that we cannot do anything without you, that we are powerless, that we're paralyzed, that we're helpless without you, and we stand with one foot because a person cannot exist. I mean, obviously you can, but a person cannot function in the regular, highly functioning way that they otherwise would when they only have one leg. And that's sort of the significance of standing with one foot in the middle of Shemona Esrei, to show that that's what tefillah is all about, to show the Ribbono Shel Olam our needs, to understand that there's a tremendous humility that's expected as we daven, and to be submissive to him, to really understand that That's what the power of tefillah, that's what the experience of tefillah is supposed to teach us. And therefore, we go into our Mishnah, which discusses what exactly our outlook should be when we talk about blowing the shofar or davening. The shofar is some sort of form of tefillah. It's an elevated form of tefillah that we do on Rosh Hashanah. So what is that mindset that we're supposed to have when we go into blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah? So the Gemara says that there seems to be a distinction between the attitude and the mindset that we're supposed to have on Rosh Hashanah and the attitude that we're supposed to have on Yom Kippur. And we'll see in greater detail why that's the case. But let's first read through the Mishnah and the Gemara that ensues. Says the Mishnah, Chaf Vav Amud Beis, Shofar Shel Rosh Hashanah. What kind of shofar person able to use to perform the mitzvah of Tkiyah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah? So the Mishnah says, you should use Shel Ya'el Pashut. You should use the shofar that comes from a wild goat. Why should you use the shofar from a wild goat and not from a ram? Because from a wild goat is a straight shofar, and from a ram is going to be very twisty. So obviously the Rishonim point out, the shofar of a wild goat also has a little bit of a curve, but for the most part it's a straight line. The one of a ram is going to be all curled up. So we'll see the significance in a minute. Upiv mitzupazav, which is also a very important comment that the Mishnah makes, in the Beis HaMikdash, when they used to blow the shofar, they had the mouth, the rim of the shofar was embedded with gold on it. It used to have gold on it. Just like we put an attar on the talis, or just like we have a silver esrog box, so too they used to put gold on the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash. Ushtei chatzotzeros min hatzdadim. So they used to have blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah. They didn't only have the shofar blowing, they also had the chatzotzeros blowing. Why did they have chatzotzeros? Because they used to blow chatzotzeros all the time in the Beis HaMikdash. But how are we going to highlight the fact that today is Rosh Hashanah? Today the shofar is the really important thing that we're supposed to be doing, not only the chatzotzeros. So what they did was, like the same way when you have a chassidish rebbe, so he doesn't walk by himself, he walks in the middle, and they have one gabbai on the side, or five gabbai on the side, and five on the other side, but you see who's in the middle. So too over here, that's what they did with the shofar and the chatzotzeros. You want to highlight the fact the shofar is the most important activity that we're doing today, so the man blowing the shofar stood in the middle. And then the two people blowing the chatzotzeros stood as the gabayim on the side. So that's the way they set it up. Okay. Shofar marich, and you blow all three of these instruments together, the two chatzotzeros on the two sides, as well as the shofar in the middle, they all blow together. So the shofar is marich, the shofar blows longer than the chatzotzeros in order that you can hear the tekiyas, and the chatzotzeros mekatzeros, the ones who are blowing the trumpets, blow a shorter blow. Shemitzvah Sayom Shofar, because after all, the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah is not with the trumpets, rather it's with the shofar, and therefore we have to make sure that we extend the blowing of the shofar, that people will be able to hear that sound, and it won't be interrupted with the chatzotzer sound. Uvetanius, what about when you have a fast day? Not when you have Rosh Hashanah. So on a fast day, they used to blow a shofar and the chatzotzer also. But which one was the more significant blowing on a fast day? It was the trumpets, it was the chatzotzer. So therefore, you did the opposite. On a fast day, when the real prerogative is that people should hear the chatzotzeros, so then we have the man with the chatzotzeros standing in the middle, and the shofar on the two sides being the gabayim to the chatzotzeros. That's what we used to do. Says the Mishnah, v'tanios, when you had a fast day, p'shal zecharim zekufufim, they used to use the shofar that was made from a male animal that was kuf, Upia mitzupa kesef, and those were made of silver. Ushte chatzotzeros be'emsa, they used to have the two chatzotzeros were in the middle because those were the more important. And the opposite, shofar mekatzer v'chatzotzeros marichos. Over here, the most important thing that you want is that everyone should hear the chatzotzeros. And therefore you have the chatzotzeros blow longer, and you have the shofar make a more truncated blowing. Shemitzvah hayam v'chatzotzeros. Now the Mishnah says a third halacha. Shava Yovel Rosh Hashanah, when you have Yom Kippur of the year of Yovel, so they also used to blow a shofar on that Yom Kippur. So it's the same thing that you do on Rosh Hashanah, that you blow with the shofar that's pretty much straight, that's what you do on Yom Kippur of Yovel. Litkia Ulebrachos, the way you blow the shofar that you choose to use, should be the same one that you use on Rosh Hashanah, and the brachos will also be the same. Meaning, most Rishonim explain what it means is, you say Malchias Zechronos Shofros, on that Rosh Hashanah Shel Yovel as well, which is not what we do nowadays, but by Yovel, that's what you do. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he says, no. But Rosh Hashanah Tokum Mishal Zecharin, he says, no, it's the opposite. On Rosh Hashanah, which shofar are you able to use? So we originally said in our Mishnah, on Rosh Hashanah, you're supposed to use the shofar which is straight. What? A straight line. You shouldn't use the one that's all curly. However, Rabbi Yehuda says the opposite. On Rosh Hashanah, a person should use the shofar that is all twisted, that is all curled up. Ubi Yoblos, and when you come to Yom Kippur, then you should use the one which is straight. So what is this, like a technical machlokas? They're arguing, should you use the straight one, should you use the curvy one? So this is a difficult machlokas. Let's read the Gemara, and then I present it here on the second side of the page, the Hebrew side, is a beautiful piece, Al Derech HaMachshava, from Rav Asher Weiss, to explain, perhaps, why it is that we have this machlokas in our Gemara about which shofar is supposed to be used, what's the most optimal shofar to use on Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur. So we'll see in a minute. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Does that mean a wild goat male would be good?
I don't know. I think the Gemara's main objective is to tell us whether it's straight or it's twisted. I don't know. I don't know if the females don't grow the same. I don't know.
Also, in the Mishnah refers to gold around the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
Oh,
en kategor nasa saneger. So that's a Turi Evan's question on our Gemara. Turi Evan asked that question, and he says, for whatever reason, en kategor nasa saneger didn't apply to the shofar. He has a hard time. The question's better than the answer. What? It's not really true, because we do extend it to other things. We extend it to the pans that you use, we extend it to things, so it's not so simple. Let's read the Gemara. Amar Ablevi, Mitzvah shel Rosh Hashanah v'shel Yom Kippurim. Rabbi Levi says the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur when you blow a shofar is bichfufim, is to use the ones that are all twisted. V'shal kol hashanah, when you blow shofar throughout the year, you're supposed to use pshutin. That's when you're supposed to use the shofar that's basically like a straight line. Ask the Gemara, what do you mean? Our Mishnah says not so. Our Mishnah says v'hatnan, shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, when you have the shofar that you're choosing to use on Rosh Hashanah, that should be shel ya'el pashut, that should be the one from a goat, which is the one that is straight, it's a straight line. So the Gemara answers, Hu d'yamar ki haitana. Levi, who says over here that you should use the one that's curled up, he is saying, like Rabbi Yehuda nar Mishnah, Titania, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, V'Rosh Hashanah Yitokim b'shal zacharim kifufim, uvi yoblos b'shal ya'elim. Ask the Gemara of Alema Hilchasak Rabbi Yehuda, why does he have to make up his own braisa? Why does he just say, I read through the Mishnah, and I happen to think Rabbi Yehuda is more correct than the Tanakhama. So why does he have to say as if it's his own braisa? So the Gemara says, no, I amrit hilchasak Rabbi Yehuda, if you would just simply get up and say, I think the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, that would be a problem, because hava mina, I would have the mistaken impression and say, va'afilu shel yovel namik Rabbi Yehuda. I would have said that even when it comes to Yom Kippur of Yovel, you're also supposed to do like Rabbi Yehuda. And really, that's not what he meant to say. Kamash malon, that is not the case. Okay, be it as it says the Gemara, but my kamiflagi, what's going on here? Who cares? You use the straight shofar, you use the twisted shofar. What's the disagreement here? What are they arguing about? And here's where I think Rav Soloveitchik's introduction, even though it has nothing to do with shofar, but I think it gives us a little bit of a perspective of what the Gemara is trying to get at here. B'maika mifligi, what is the machlokas here between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda? What kind of shofar one is supposed to use on Rosh Hashanah? Says the Gemara, Mar Savar B'Rosh Hashanah, one opinion feels that on Rosh Hashanah, Kama Dekayif Inish Daite Tvei Mali. On Rosh Hashanah, the more that a person feels humbled, feels submissive to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's the greatest way to have a Rosh Hashanah. Let's look at Rashi here. Rashi right on the side says, Kama Dekayif Inish B'Tfilaso, when a person's panav kavush in the aretz, when my face is down to the ground, tvei adif, that's the best way to daven. Mishim v'hayu einei v'libi sham, hilkach, and therefore on Rosh Hashanah, dilatfila, ulahazkir akedis Yitzchak ba, since on Rosh Hashanah I'm trying to supplicate before the Ribbono Shel Olam, since on Rosh Hashanah I'm trying to be humble and submissive, therefore he says, ba'inan kfufim, therefore you need the one that's like a straight line. I'm sorry, that's twisted. The Yovlo Shehin Likro Duror Brinam Pshutim Mugzera Shavalesle. Okay, so the Gemara says one opinion is of the feeling that our tefillos on Rosh Hashanah are supposed to be with humility, are supposed to be with a sense of submissiveness, and therefore, since that's what we're supposed to be feeling, if a person uses a shofar that's all curled up, that's like something that's not straight. It's like my life is twisted. Everything's not clear. I don't know exactly what's going to be. I'm nervous. I'm concerned. And therefore, that's why we use the shofar that would be more of a twisted shofar. And what does the other opinion feel? On Yom Kippur, You should just be straight. Like Rashi says in the Mishnah, Rashi says in the Mishnah that, midi de tefila bai pshitas. Do it straight, amuna pshuta, just throw up your hands, and trust in the Ribbono Shalom, and that's good enough. What does the other opinion say? Mar savar, b'Rosh Hashanah kama de pashit inish dai te tfei mali. No, on Rosh Hashanah, a person should not feel humble. On Rosh Hashanah, a person should not feel submissive. Rosh Hashanah, you should go straight in with confidence and say, God, I'm coming here. This is what I want. This is what I need. Let's go. Let's get down to business. However, b'taniros, kama de kayif inish nafshe, dai te tfei mali. On a tanis, the more a person feels humility as they daven, that is the real objective. That's the main objective of a tanis. So what exactly is going on here? What are they arguing about? What's happening? Rosh Hashanah is different than Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is different than Rosh Hashanah. So I saw Rav Asher Weiss has a beautiful piece in his Sefer on Mo'adim where he writes about this Gemara. Look at what he says. Me'odai hishtokakti lahavin pesher davar shita zu. I always try to understand what's happening here. The shiny Rosh Hashanah be Yom Kippur. Why is Rosh Hashanah different than Yom Kippur? Be Rosh Hashanah Amru, Diyesh Litkoa B'Shofar Kafuv. On Rosh Hashanah, we're supposed to use one that is specifically a twisted shofar, Remez Li'adam, because it's supposed to remind us, Kama Dekayiv Daiti Tvei Mali. Because the more we feel the humility, the more we feel that we're in need, that's going to be a more impressive Rosh Hashanah. Be Rosh Hashanah Tzarech Lamed Adam B'Kfifas Koma V'Nemichas Ruach V'Kach Yizke B'Din. Lo can be Yom Kippurim. Kama de pasha daite tvei mali. Barashi kosev sham. Nisa levavenu al kapayim. Yesh la'ayin. Halo gam b'Rosh Hashanah yom tefila v'tachanun. So what's going on here? What are we supposed to be doing? Right? What are we supposed to be doing? What's the attitude? So he goes into a whole discussion, but I didn't copy that. The only part I copied, this is not one paragraph after the other. It's a page later. V'hanir bazeh. So he suggests his own interpretation. Api amavur b'Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says something fascinating. Am Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi, Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eino Dan Yechidi. Just like you're not allowed to have a Dayan who takes on a case and judges by himself, so too the Ribbono Shel Olam himself also is not a Dan Yechidi. He doesn't judge us Kaviyachol by himself. Shenemar, V'chol Tzeva Shamayim Omdim Alav Mimino U'Mismolo. He, so to speak, the Ribbono Shel Olam asks for some help from the Malachim and Chol Tzeva Shamayim. Eilu Matin Lekav Schus, Elu Matan Lekav Chova, says the Yerushalmi. Some opinions in Shamayim say, you know what, I think Schechter should have a good year, and the other opinions say, no, I think he shouldn't have a good year, and they're arguing back and forth, and they have a whole dintara there. Afo Pisha Enu Dan Yechidi, even though he doesn't go through the case by himself, and he asks for some intervention, Chosam Yechidi, in the end of the day, the Ribbono Shel Olam alone is the one who stamps it, and he says, thank you for all your input, but in the end of the day, I have the final say. Now, look at the next paragraph. Adam mekofif kamaso vidaito, and my feeling is, kasher boshu bedavar umevakesh lahastira. When I'm embarrassed about something, so I lower my head a little bit. When I have something that I'm trying to hide, and I don't want people to see, I don't want them to know about, so I hide. Kasher kayif daite miskayimbo masha amru. Amr abelezer laolam havikabel vikayim. Amr abzera afanan amitim. Okay, whatever. Pirush Rashi, hava anavuschia, ase atzmacha afel vishafel. When a person is a little bit embarrassed about something, so they're more humble, they're a little more subdued. Achi says, look at the next paragraph, Kol zeh b'Rosh Hashanah. This is only on Rosh Hashanah that we feel a little bit embarrassed, that we feel we have to hide ourselves a little. So that's why the attitude on Rosh Hashanah is, do something, do the tefillah in an act of humility. Shebo ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Dan Yechidi. We're embarrassed that the Ribbono Shel Olam is calling in all the Tzva Shamayim and everyone else to come and review what we've done this past year. Ela bezen shamala mimino mismolo. Eilu matan l'schus, eilu matan l'chova. Mehem efshe lahastir ulihisater. From them, we're embarrassed. From them, we're humiliated. What, now everybody in Shamayim, all the Malachim are going to go and look through everything I did? So I have to act with a tremendous amount of humility on Rosh Hashanah. Ah, he says, "Be Yom Kippurim, she's man hachitum." But on Yom Kippur, where that's the time, where we have the chasima, the seitev lano hachasima, Hakadosh Baruch Hu chosim yichidi. The Yerushalmi says, the Ribbono Shel Olam himself is the one who's signing off on that on Yom Kippur. Mimenu ein lahaster davar. From him, we don't have to be embarrassed. We don't have to be humiliated. We don't have to hide anything. Halo hu levado bochin klayus velev. He knows what's going on inside. He's able to see deep inside of our hearts, even when we think we're hiding everything, even when we think that it's all closed off and it's dark. And therefore on Yom Kippur, our tefillah is not supposed to be one of humility and submissiveness and burying our heads in the ground and not wanting to pick ourselves up because we're so concerned that we're so embarrassed. Rather, it's kama depasha daite tfei mali. Nisa lavavenu al kapayim. You throw up your hands and you say, here I am, this is what it is, you know everything about me, I know everything that you know, and let's just face the reality. There's no reason to be burying yourself because there's no one to be embarrassed of. It's between you and the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a time for you to have a relationship with him. It's a time for absolute honesty with him. And therefore he says, maybe this is the reason. Bayom HaKadosh HaZeh Nitzavim Anu Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu BaHachna Gemura UveHakara Shlema She'en Lanu Yecholos LaHaster Adavar. We don't take a crooked shofar as if to say that we're burying ourselves on the ground when we come to Yom Kippur. No. On Yom Kippur we stand up straight and we say, yes, we're owning up to the mistakes that we made. We're not embarrassed. It's between me and you. We're going to talk it out. We're going to have a conversation. And I want you to give me the chasima. I understand that nobody else is involved here. And perhaps that's the attitude. That's why there's perhaps a difference between the attitude we're supposed to have in our tefillah on Rosh Hashanah, when we use a twisted shofar, and the attitude that we're supposed to have on Yom Kippur, when the Gemara says that perhaps we should be using a more straightforward shofar. Yeah. It's Malchius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think it would be the other way around.
I would have said
the other way around.
No, it is always a question. I mean, there are some who...
When you're standing there saying Al Fay, you sometimes feel like you want to bury yourself and be ashamed.
But I think this is a very new perspective, meaning you sometimes feel that you want to bury yourself, but at the same time, why do you only feel you have to bury yourself now? You think God didn't know all along what you were doing? You do know, right?
So
it's time to stand up and say, I know who you are, you know who I am, let's have a conversation. This is what it is. Face the reality.
Everything seems to be very upbeat on Rosh Hashanah, as opposed to hiding.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a perspective. I think it's a drush, it's something to think about. But I think it gives us a little bit to consider. Again, tefillah in general is something where we're supposed to portray the lack of ability to live life without help, without the Ribbono Shel Olam's intervention. It's to raglaim regla yishara, not only that we should be like malachim, but also like the Mabit says, the reason why we stand with one foot is to show that we are lacking, to show that we are disabled, to show that we're not able to function without the Ribbono Shel Olam's help, without his intervention. I think this is something to consider, that maybe the perspective on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is a little bit different. It's not exactly the same. It's not always the same feeling, but it's something just to think about. Hey, Yom Kippur is a time to be brutally honest, because that's the time when the Ribbono Shel Olam and you are having a conversation with no one else involved. He doesn't call in the whole Bezin Shalmala to come and judge you. It's him himself, him alone, Kavayachal, is sitting there with you alone and figuring out what the Chasima should be. It's a time to be honest. It's a difficulty, but it's a time to be honest and stand up straight and really own up to the mistakes that you've made throughout the year. So now let's continue with the small Gemara on the top. So we're told that in the Mishnah, we were told that they used to have the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash, and Piv Mitzupah Zav, they used to have the lip, the rim of the shofar, had gold all around it, a gold coating. Ask the Gemara of HaTanya, don't we learn in a Braisa, Tzipeu Zav B'makam HaNachas Piv Pasul? If you have a rim of gold around the place where you're supposed to blow the shofar, that is going to disqualify the shofar. Now the Rishonim disagree, why would that disqualify the shofar? So Rashi and other Rishonim say the reason why it would disqualify the shofar is simply because now it's no longer going to sound like a shofar. A shofar has one sound, but if you have a different substance that's in the way, and you're blowing through that substance, now it's going to make a different sound. So it's not going to be the kol ha-shofar. That's what some Rishonim say. The Ritva says, no, the reason why, in such a case, you would disqualify the shofar once you put a gold coating around the rim is because it's a chatzitza. It's a chatzitza. You have to blow the shofar directly with your mouth onto the shofar. Now you're going to have another substance in the way, that's going to constitute a chatzitza. And that's what we're going to talk about in a minute. Ask the Gemara, so don't we know that would be either a chatzitza or that it would change the sound of the shofar? So how does the Mishnah say you're allowed to have a rim of gold around the shofar? How can you do that? Says the Gemara, you're right. Amar Abaye, ki tananami masnisin. What does our Mishnah mean when it says that they used to have a gold rim around the shofar? It means shaloba makamanachas apetanan. It doesn't mean they put the rim of gold around the top of the shofar that it would be in the way of when the person was blowing, But rather, the Gemara means to say you would put somewhere in the middle of the shofar, where let's say where you hold your hand, right? There's no din that you have to hold the shofar. So let's say where you hold your hand, you would put some gold on there for hiddur mitzvah. That's what the Mishnah means. Now, let's get back to the first part of what the Gemara said. If you would have had the golden rim around the edge of the shofar where you blow it, that would have been a chatzitza.
Why? But if it's necessary, why would it be a chatzitza?
Why is it necessary? You're doing it for hiddur mitzvah.
Okay, if that's the case, doesn't it necessarily say that, does it?
No, they did it for the hiddur mitzvah. That's the understanding. Now, Rashi's... What?
What does it add?
What does it add? It makes it beautiful. What do you mean? What does it add when you have a silver esrog box? It's hiddur mitzvah,
it
right?
It's a function.
Okay, what about whatever? What? Atar on the talus. Atar on the talus, what does it add? Nothing. It adds a hiddur mitzvah, makes it more beautiful, right? So the same over here, they used to put gold on the shofar in order to show hiddur mitzvah. Now the problem is, you're telling me in the Gemara that if you have a golden coating around the mouth, around the lip of the shofar, that's going to disqualify it because of a chatzitza, says the Ritva. But the problem with that is the following. The Chalkos Yoav, who was one of the greatest Talmidim of the Avnei Nezer, he was a tremendous genius, an unbelievable Ilui, the Chalkos Yoav. And the Chalkos Yoav asked the following questions, Rabbi the Avnei Nezer. He says, we have a Gemara in Sukkah, where the Gemara says, in Daf Lamed Zayin, Kol l'nu'uso eno chotzeitz. The Gemara talks about the following. The Gemara says, you're supposed to hold the Dalaminim in your hands. Says the Gemara, what if I put a big fancy wrapping around it, right? We all have this big, whatever you call it, that you put around it. So, the Gemara says, isn't that a chatzitza? Now I'm not holding the wrapping with my own hands anymore. So the Gemara says, no, kol l'nu usay nechotzitz. When we talk about the halacha of a chatzitza, if the reason why you have that substance in the way is because it's to beautify the mitzvah, it's for a hiddur mitzvah, like by the lulav, the reason why we tie it up and put that fancy case around it is because, I'm not talking about the koshikul, right? So the reason why we put that on is to make the lulav look more put together, more nice, more smooth. So in a case like that, the Gemara says, kol l'nu usay nechotzitz. When you're doing it for the sake of beautifying the mitzvah, that does not constitute a chatzitza. So ask the Chalkos Yoav, how do you put that principle, and that's Paskin and Shulchan Aruch, Taf Reish Nun Aleph and Hilchas Lulav, how does that fit with our Gemara? Our Gemara says, if you would have a gold rim around the lip of the shofar, that would be a chatzitza, that would be in the way. What do you mean a chatzitza? You're doing this only for hiddur mitzvah, you're doing it to make the mitzvah more beautiful, so how can that be a chatzitza? What's the problem? That's the kasha of the Chalkos Yoav. What? Let's say it's not made from the same material. Let's say you make it from something else. So that's the machlokus in the Gemara. The real reason you have to tie it is only because of hiddur mitzvah, because it looks nicer. Right? So once you're doing it only for hiddur mitzvah, the Gemara says, since you're doing it for the hiddur, that doesn't constitute a chatzitza. So if that's the rule, that hilchos chatzitza doesn't apply when you have something to beautify the mitzvah, so then how do you understand over here, why should a golden lip around the shofar, where you're going to blow it, why should that create a problem? Yeah?
The gold around the lip, which is the way the sound comes out of the shofar.
No, so that's a question. Again, some Rishonim said the reason why the gold is a problem is because it's going to change the sound of the shofar. Okay, once you say that, that makes sense. But if you say the reason why the gold is a problem has nothing to do with the sound is going to be the same. You're going to say the reason why the gold is a problem is because it's a chatzitza. What do you mean? There is no din chatzitza when it's for hiddur mitzvah. Yeah?
The difference by the lulav, it's enabling you to take them all in one shot instead of a katan or hem together.
Yeah.
By the shofar, it's not doing anything. It's not enabling you to...
What do you mean? I could take all the dalaminim even if they weren't tied. My hand is big enough. My fist is big enough. I could take everything in one shot. Not such a problem. You know, I remember I was talking to Rav Asher Weiss once, and I think it's a way of thinking that he had, but it taught me a big lesson. I was young at the time, I was 19, and I used to talk to him in learning every week on Thursdays. I used to go learn with him during lunch. So I remember I was once talking to him about something we were learning, and he asked me some sort of question in the middle, and he said, Nusa, what do you think? So I said, well, maybe you can make a chiluk like this, maybe you could say it like this. So he said to me, Shai, that's a chiluk she'ena mechalik. He's saying, you're making a distinction without a difference. That's what he told me. Which is a very important principle. Sometimes we can differentiate between two things. We can make a distinction, but it doesn't make a difference. You can find that there's a difference, that there's a distinction between two items that you're trying to say are similar, but if it doesn't make an afkamina, if it doesn't make a difference, then your distinction has no relevance. So that's, I think it's an important point to consider. We can all come up with reasons and ideas. I'm not saying this is a case, but I think it's a way of thinking, a very clear way of thinking that unless the distinction you're going to draw really makes a difference, it's not a distinction. It's considered like it's the same thing. So over here as well, what is the difference? How do you explain why we should say, by lulav, we say anything that's to beautify the mitzvah doesn't constitute a chatzitza because kalunu usein achotzeitz, that's the klal, that's the rule. Whereas over here, by the shofar, all of a sudden we wake up and say a new rule. Even though you have gold, and the reason for the gold is just to beautify the mitzvah, it's going to be a problem. Why is it a problem? So the Avni Nezer gave two answers, which we're not going to be able to give both tonight, maybe next week. But the Avni Nezer presented two answers. Each one of them is so fundamental. Each one of them is so important, but the Avni Nezer started off like this. Avni Nezer quotes a Ramban. He says, the Ramban in our Gemara, the Ramban in our Sugya, in the back of the Gemara says, what happens if a person is a magician, Madel Baltokeya? So what's so special about your tekiyos? You can hold the shofar over here, not connected to your mouth at all. You're going to start blowing. You have lungs of a I don't know what, and you're going to be able to blow, and it's going to come out of the shofar sounding like a regular blowing of the shofar. Amazing. So the Ramban says, is that going to be a fulfillment of the mitzvah or not? What would you have said? No. Why not? Why not?
It's the same sound.
It's what? Same sound. The Shema Kol shofar. It's not like somebody, it's not like you had an animal came and blew a shofar and oh, we say, oh, the Shema Kol shofar. No. You had a human being, is blowing the ear, it's coming out of the shofar, sounding like a shofar. Why no? Why shouldn't it work? What? Why is it not a tekiah? Why? Why? So the Ramban says you're not Yotze. Ramban says you're not Yotze. Now this is a difficult Ramban. And the Gemara says, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Ramban and Tov Kuf Pei Vav, says the Shulchan Aruch, Hirchik HaShofar V'Nafach Bo V'Taka. Let's say a person goes ahead and takes the shofar and is Hirchik. You hold it at a distance from your mouth and somehow you get a tzkiya to come out. Puzzle, says the Shulchan Aruch, you're not Mekayim the Mitzvah. Why? Because the same way our Gemara says that if you have gold on the rim of the shofar, that will not work for the Mitzvah. So to over here, it's not going to work. Ask the Prichadosh, what's the connection? What is one with the other? Over there, you have a substance in the way. Over there, you have a chatzitza because you have the gold in the way. That's why it doesn't work. What does that have to do with the case of air? What, air is a chatzitza? Air is not a chatzitza. It's just air in the way. So what's the problem? How come my tekiya isn't going to work? What's the connection between the case of our Gemara, of having a shofar with a little lip, a little rim of gold on the edge? What does that have anything to do with a person who holds a shofar away from his mouth and there's air in between? So there's a hefsik, but there's nothing being mapsik, right? So that's the kasha of the prichadosh. Since when is distance a hefsik? What does that mean? There's nothing in the way. It's not like there's a substance in the way. So again, by lulav where the mitzvah is, take them in your hands. You got to hold it. So if you're wearing gloves, it's not going to work. Where you have a mitzvah, that you have to do it. Netilas yadayim. If you don't get your hands wet, it's not going to work. But over here, the mitzvah is just blow the shofar, make sure the sound comes out. So that's what I did. So what's the problem? What?
Says
the Avnei Nezer. Says the Avnei Nezer that you see here a chiddush of the Ramban, and he quotes it from a Ramban in Maseches Becharis. Avnei Nezer was such a genius. He quotes a Ramban in Maseches Becharis that has nothing to do with anything that we're discussing, but the Avnei Nezer found a needle in a haystack, and he says the Ramban says something very important. The Ramban says, basically, it's talking like an achron. It's like Rabbi Meir Twersky once said. If you close your eyes, he says, I can hear Reb Chaim Soloveitchik talking when I read the Ramban. Okay? I don't know, I've never heard such a thing. But I guess if you read the Ramban with the right inflection, so now you hear Reb Chaim talking. So over here again, you have the Ramban talks like an achron. The Ramban says, there's two different halachas. Sometimes you have a halacha that a chatzitza is going to disqualify whatever you're trying to do. Other times you have a halacha nothing to do with chatzitza. Other times you have a halacha where the Torah says, you better touch it. Doesn't matter chatzitza, no chatzitza, what the laws of chatzitza are or are not, you have to touch it. So over here says the Ramban, the halacha is as follows. We don't say that a chatzitza is what disqualifies the shofar because there's gold around the rim. If it was only because of the laws of chatzitza, we should follow the regular principle that when you have something which is only to beautify the mitzvah, chatzitza is not taken into account. It's not part of the equation. Says the Ramban, here by shofar you need more than that. Here by shofar you need not only that there shouldn't be a chatzitza, you need an extra step further. You need also that the person should actually be touching it. And therefore, says the Ramban, if you have air in the way, that's the same as having gold in the way. Because bottom line, exactly what you said. Bottom line, my mouth is not touching the shofar. It's Gzeiras HaKosid. By shofar, you need to have touching, not just that you shouldn't have anything in the way, you need to have absolutely touching your mouth to the shofar. That's the Chiddush of the Ramban. Now,
what's the source for
Oh, so what's the source for that is a very, very good question, and it will become even a stronger question in a minute. Let's say, take for example, this Ramban is not only something that's this is all the Ramban says, but the concept of the Ramban is not limited to Hilchos Shofar. Let's take for example the Big Day Kahuna. So we have Big Day Kahuna that the Kohen used to wear. And the Kohen has to wear the Big Day Kahuna on his body. He's not allowed to wear anything else. If he wears more clothing, we consider that to be Yitur Begadim. He's not allowed to add clothing, even underwear. He's not allowed to wear anything extra more than the Torah says he's supposed to wear. So says the Gemara in Zvachim Daf Yutes. A very strange question. The Gemara wants to know, the Kohen Gadol is wearing his Begadim. Or the Kohen, wearing his Begadim, he's shechting a carbon. You're not allowed to shech the carbon without Begadim. So he's in the Beis HaMikdash doing his job. Ba'i Rava, nichnasala ruach. Al b'sara ba'inan v'haleka. What's the halach in the following case? I'm wearing my Big Day Kahuna like I'm supposed to. Now there's winds, ferocious winds. And my shirt is a little bit baggy. The Kohanim's clothing weren't tight on them. So the shirt is a little bit baggy. Pants are a little bit baggy. And all of a sudden the wind gets in the way. My clothing are no longer touching my body. Why? Because I have airspace in the way. So it's not like I have a foreign substance in the way. I have air in the way. So the Gemara wants to know, well, bottom line, it says that the Begadim have to be al bisaro, has to be on your body. Bottom line right now, it's not touching your body. The airspace is in the way. So the Gemara is not sure. The Gemara is a suffix. Do we consider that to be on your body, even though there's airspace in the middle? Or do you say, sorry, end of the day, that's not called on your body because it's not touching it. So that's the Gemara's suffix. And the Gemara in Yuma Daf Lamed Aleph also talks about the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. What did the Kohen Gadol used to do? So it says he had to put on the gold clothing, he had to change to the white clothing, he had to go to the mikveh in the middle, back and forth and changing in and out of the clothing. I think it was Chamish Tfilos, he had to go to the mikveh 5 times and change his begadim 10 times, I think, right? I think. Yeah, Chamish Tfilos. What?
5, 10, and 10, no?
No, I think he did 5 Tfilos because in between each change of clothing he used to go to the mikveh. So the Mishnah tells us a whole list of things that he used to do. Listen to the Mishnah in Yuma. So he goes into the mikveh, as he's supposed to. Yarad v'tavel, goes into the mikveh, that's the process. Allah, he comes up from the water of the mikveh, v'nistapik, he dries himself off, and then he goes and does the avod. So, I ask you a very simple question. Why doesn't the Mishnah say, and if he has a running nose, he should go get a tissue? And if his hair is a little bit, not done well after he comes out of the mikveh, he should take a brush and brush his hair. Or he should go take a shave. Why does the Mishnah have to say, comes up from the mikveh, he's soaking wet, and he goes and uses a towel? Of course he uses a towel. When he's a human being, what else is he going to do? Everybody who comes out of the mikveh, everyone who comes out of a shower, uses a towel. So the Mishnah doesn't describe all the things that he does. Doesn't say every time he needs to blow his nose, he goes and gets a tissue. Doesn't say anything. So how come it says he uses a towel? Oh, says the Mishnah Lamelech, you know why? This is not just another fact to know about the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. This is very important. If the Kohen Gadol is not going to go ahead and dry himself off, and he's going to put on the begadim because he's in a rush and he wants to get everything done, and he doesn't want to stand there by himself without his clothing on, he is going to be having a chatzitza between his clothing and his body because there's water in the way. You'll tell me it's going to dry up in 3 minutes, and once it dries up, what's the difference, right? So the Menchas Chinuch says, no, that doesn't count because the reason why that doesn't help is because there's a seder, there's an order of how you have to put the begadim on. This beged comes before the other one. So now, if he's going to have a chatzitza on his body, it means when he put the shirt on, he wasn't really called putting the shirt on. Now, 5 minutes later, when all the water is dried off, he's going to turn out, it's like tasav alamina asa. It's like all the clothing are on him already, but it was shaloka sidron, which the Minchas Chinuch says you're going to be chayv misa for, I think, if I'm not mistaken. If you do the avoda and you put on the begadim, shaloka sidron. So, it's a big problem. Either way, so the Mishnah Melech tells us over here that if he doesn't dry himself off, he's going to have a big problem. That's going to be a chatzitza. And that's why the Mishnah goes out of its way to tell us when he comes out of the mikveh, before he puts his clothing on, he uses a towel. That doesn't just mean like, oh, and he has to blow his nose so he goes and gets a tissue. No, that's not the same thing. This is really an integral part of putting on the Big Day Kahuna for the Avodah of Yom Kippur. Fine? Ask the Acharonim, the Birkei Yosef, and others ask, what do you mean? Don't we have a principle that a davar lach is eino chotzeitz? Let's say a woman goes into the mikveh. A woman uses the mikveh, but before she goes to the mikveh, she takes a shower. So what are you going to say? She has to dry herself off? She can't have anything wet on her before she goes into the mikveh? Of course not. Why not?
Mimbamino,
okay. 1 second. So, but no, the principle is not because mimbamino, it's because davar lach. When you have something wet, we assume it's not a chatzitza. Why? Because it will get absorbed into everything else you're doing. And in fact, you're going to say it's mimbamino, but it's more than mimbamino. Why? Because the Gemara says in Psachim Daf Samachay, if you have a Kohen who's doing avod in the Beis HaMikdash, And he thinks the floor is cold. Whatever, he's uncomfortable. So you know what he's going to do? He's going to put a little stool on the floor. He'll stand on the stool. This way he's not going to be cold on the marble floor. Makes sense. So obviously we know he's going to invalidate the avoda because he has to be standing with his 2 feet on the ground, on the ritzpah sazer. So what if you have a kohen, which happened every day? You have thousands of karbanos are being shechted left and right, and there's blood all over the floor of the mizbeach, and there's blood all over the place. It's not like they used to go and mop it up every 3 minutes. So you have a kohen, he's walking around barefoot on the floor, and he has blood all over his feet, and it says that the blood went over sometimes all the way ad arkuveim, it went all the way up to their knees sometimes. Thank God I'm not a kohen, I would be very uncomfortable, but that's what they did. So ask the Birka Yosef, I don't understand. It says that a kohen has to have his feet touching the ground, right? Kohen has to have his feet touching the ground. And yet you're telling me that when there was blood all over the floor, he was able to do the avoda like normal. They didn't mop it up. So how can that be? How can that be? How come when he puts a stool on the floor, that's a chatzitza? When he has the blood on the floor, it's not a chatzitza. The answer is because davar lach is not a chatzitza. Because you don't say that his feet are not on the ground. His feet are on the ground. There's blood in the way. Okay, there's a little bit of liquid in the way, but it's not a problem. So if that's the case, that a davar lach is not a chatzitza, something wet is not a chatzitza, so how come over here? How does the Mishnah Lamelech tell us that when he comes up from the mikveh, he has to dry himself off, and if he doesn't dry himself off, that's a chatzitza? What do you mean? It's a davar lach? Davar lach is not a chatzitza. You know what the answer is? The answer is that when you put on big dekuna, it says al besaro. It's not good enough that you shouldn't have a chatzitza. There are some instances in halacha, there are some areas in halacha where we say it's not only about a chatzitza. There are some areas in halacha where we say you need more than that. You need a step further. You need that you should actually be touching it. And that, like the Ramban says in our sugya, it's not good enough by a shofar that you just don't have a chatzitza in the way. You need more than that. You need that the Baal Tokeya's mouth has to actually touch the shofar itself. And that's what the Ramban teaches us. That's what the Avnei Nezer's Chiddush is here. That's why the Ramban says when it comes to even holding the shofar extended away from your mouth, that also is going to be a chatzitza, even though there's nothing in the way. But you're not yotze the mitzvah because you need the shofar to actually touch the mouth, not just that you shouldn't have a chatzitza. That's why the Avnei Nezer answers why we cannot use the principle of kalu ne'usa in a chotzitz here, because over here we're talking about a case where you need to have the mouth actually touching over. And maybe we'll just say one last practical case. Some of the other cases are a little bit complicated, but one final case that some say is there's a big discussion the Pischei Tshuva has in Hilchas Mezuzah. So we all have the practice that we put the mezuzah in a mezuzah case, but many objected to that. The Vilna Gaon writes that you're not allowed to do that. It's a chatzitza. You have to put it on the wall on the side of the door. And if you don't do that, it's a chatzitza, you're not mekayim the mitzvah of mezuzah. That's what the Vilna Gaon says. Pischei Tshuva says, I don't know what the Vilna Gaon's talking about. We have rise in the Gemara that he's wrong. It's not true. Okay, so whatever the Vilna Gaon meant, the Vilna Gaon meant. But some suggest, you know why the Vilna Gaon said that? So some ask, what do you mean? How can you say it's a chatzitza? I'm putting up a beautiful gold mezuzah case because I want to beautify the mitzvah. Some say the reason why is because it says, al mezuzahs beisecha. Just like by Big Dekuna, it says, al besaro, not just that it shouldn't be a chatzitza, but it actually has to touch his body. And that's what we say, even though he only has water on him, and water generally is not a chatzitza, but over here it is. Because it's not just about chatzitza, it's about the big day kahuna actually touching the body. So too over here, maybe that's what the Vilna Gaon means. Why is it that we defy all the rules? Why is it that we say, specifically by Hilchos Mezuzah, all of a sudden we wake up and we say, oh, it's going to be a chatzitza. What do you mean a chatzitza? The only reason I'm putting up this beautiful mezuzah case is to be a hider mitzvah. Anytime I have a hider mitzvah, that's not considered a chatzitza. So how do you explain it? The reason is perhaps because the pasuk goes out of its way and says, al mezuzah beisecha, which means it's not about chatzitza. It's about, is the mezuzah touching the doorpost of the house or not? If it's not touching the doorpost, perhaps the Vilna Gaon says, you're not in fulfillment of your mitzvah of mezuzah on your doorpost.